Blog Talk Radio.
That is designed to give you a bird's eye view of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Yahweh, and your interactions with him, what is appropriate and what is not, the fundamentals, also in regards to one another, or how we should be interacting with one another, and also with strangers, different nations. By the looks of it, we need all this devotion and then some, double dallying on it. It's true. But before Cartrell and I get started on our studies, you know, I always like to make contemporary comments on ongoing matters. It appears that the Chauvin's trial has come to an end. The prosecutor has rested their case. The defense has rested their case. And Monday will be the closing arguments, and the judge will hand the case off to them to make a decision. And what do I expect from these jurors? Nothing. I expect nothing from these jurors, but I do pray to Yah for a little bit of justice, just a little bit. And also, considering Brooklyn City, I've seen the taser, and I've seen a 9mm. The taser is yellow and black, looks nothing like a black 9mm, and the difference in the weight is quite different. I don't know how you make that kind of mistake. Oops, I shot him. Come on now. You've been at this 26 years. And lady, Miss Potter, you mean to tell me you don't know the difference between a taser and a 9mm handgun? Perhaps you are in the wrong line of business. Perhaps you should have been the city dog catcher. And I'm sure you wouldn't know the difference between a pit bull and a cocker spaniel. Yes. Also, and last but not least, let us not forget those that are still plagued by COVID-19. And do the best you can with what you got. First and foremost, stay connected to Yah. Secondly, follow the CDC guidelines. Face masks, wash your hands. And I like to add on some additional things as far as your eating properly, taking proper nutrition, and supplements such as zinc, B complex, black seed oil, and so on and so forth. You can add on. You don't have to take my word at everything. Just add on. You can add on other things in order to improve your immune system. Okay? And they have said about these COVID-19s that they said two shots. Now they're trying to add on to three. I don't know what the hell they're doing. And also the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Now they're saying women under 50 years old can't take it. Only for men. Should give some reason to pause on jumping up and taking these vaccines. These people don't know what they're doing. It's true. You're being used, people. You're guinea pigs. Stop it. So let us bring my brother and friend on from New York City, Cartrell. May the Most High bless you and your family. Your mic is hot. Shalom.
Well, praise to the Holy One of Israel, God, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Shalom, family. May the Most High bless you. Shalom, Brother Yamsu Fahri. May the Most High bless you and your family.
Thank you very much, my brother. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I don't expect nothing much from a Chauvin trial either, because I've seen work. I don't know what happened to the brother that went jogging, right? We don't forgot about that. And then people that followed him and shot him while he was jogging. What happened in that case?
Right. Oh, I still think that guy, I think they brought charges on the son and the daddy. I don't know when they going to trial or whatnot. Hadn't heard much about it, but
have we heard about Breonna Taylor?
No. We other than the fact, I don't think they're going to bring charges against those police officers. Not much or nothing. That's why I don't expect anything, Cartrell.
And in the case of Brooklyn Central, the female cop that shot the brother, I don't know much about guns because I never had a gun, mm-hmm. never used a gun, never wanted a gun.
Right.
But I know this, that a 9mm handgun,
mm-hmm.
it has a safety on it, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Don't you have to take the safety off in order for the gun to be shot?
Yep, you got to pop the safety, I believe it's on the left-hand side. You got to click it down.
Okay. So that's a conscious thing that you do in order to shoot, right?
Right.
You don't do that with a taser, do you?
No, I think the taser has a switch on that you have to turn the switch on, and then lights show up where you're pointing to. You turn a little switch on it. I think it's in the back of, I'm just saying, I think it's in the back of the taser. And you switch it on, and it shows two lights to so help navigate where you're shooting it.
I've seen that taser. It has like a bubble handle. And it don't
right.
look like it feel anything like a gun.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't.
So, I mean, they use any excuse. And for her to do that in the city that or the place that she's in, the state that she's in, while that serious trial is being
right.
Televised worldwide, for her to do that shows that they just don't care.
Well, if it's just in you, country, it's just in you.
Yeah.
No matter where you at, it's going to come out.
And what about a 13-year-old that got shot by a cop on the arm
in
Chicago?
I saw that, and that's questionable, Cartrell, because I saw some portion of the video, and the young man did have a weapon. Him and the 20-year-old out shooting. I don't know what they were shooting at. And I think they said the 20-year-old, when the police arrived on the scene, the 20-year-old hands the going off to the 13-year-old, put him and down straight. The 13-year-old running him when he turned around with the weapon in his hand. The officer didn't know what his intent was, so he fired upon him. But then he offered care immediately after he fired upon him, hit him one time in the chest. So, you know, in that situation, Cartrell, you have to ask yourself, what part did you play in?
Well, the cop didn't get shot at. He told the little boy to stop. The boy stopped. He turned around with his hands up in the air. The cop shot him while his hand was in the air.
Well, you know, Cartrell, I'm going to be honest about that one. That would be hard for me because a gun and a bullet don't know who you is. I don't know what your mind is. I don't know if you're playing with me or whatnot. I figured I did drop that weapon. You know, and you turn around with that weapon still in your hand, bro. I'm going to tell you, Cartrell, I'd have blasted.
He turned around. And the weapon wasn't in his hand. They showed the video.
They did it? Okay. Yep. All right. Okay. All right. All right.
They showed the video, and they showed a still photo. The boy
okay.
stopped, and he put his hand straight up. As soon as he put his hand up, pow, cop shot him.
Oh, yeah. But then again, Cartrell, you got to ask yourself what part you play in some things, brother.
He's 13 years old. He was somebody that's older than him that had him out there. What he's supposed to
right. Well, Cartrell, let me tell you, I'm going to say this again. You have to ask yourself what part you played in, okay? I was 13 years old. A lot of things that these boys and girls are doing now at 13, I and you didn't do, Cartrell, okay? So,
well, I mean, I was out in the street late at night with my friends past 12 o'clock at certain nights, and I wasn't expecting to get shot by no cops.
Did you have a weapon?
My friends had weapons, some of them.
Okay, all right. And then, Cartrell?
I think the cops need better training because from what I saw, he had no real good reason to shoot him because he was giving him commands. The young boy obeyed command, turned around, put his hands up.
Right. Cartrell, this situation.
You
got to
see the video, bro.
Oh, hold on. I'm looking at it right now. I see the gun in his hand. Okay. He turned around. He had the gun in his hand on the turn. He must have dropped it as he completed the turn. See, on
I
the turn,
I'm
looking at it back. Let me see what I'm saying. On the turn, when he was turning around, he had the gun and he dropped it as he was turning. That's when he dropped it as he was making that turn. So the officer at the time, I'm not, contrary. There's no way I'm justified, because I don't believe in, I don't believe nobody should have guns anyway, truth be told, unless they're hunting weapons and things of that nature. But that being said, a lot of these people think it's a broken contrary. Police and citizens elect, okay? So that being said, you don't know what people mind at. But I'm sure the police officer saw the gun on the turn. He didn't know the boy was going to dump it, drop it, and he completed the turn. Okay? So what I'm saying, Contreras, this is a gray area right here. It's not clear cut. And like I said, I'm not a police officer. I'm not dealing with the scrounge of society, and neither are you. But in a situation like this, you know, it's just, it's hard to say. I feel for that boy. I feel for his parents. But again, Katsuyo, I must ask, what part do you play in this? Okay? Well, you know the dynamics we're already in. We're in a bloodthirsty, violent society. Okay? And we're dealing with bloodthirsty, violent police officers. We're dealing with bloodthirsty, violent criminals. And so it is just like throwing fuel on fire. You know, so it's a hard gray area, Contreras. And it cost that boy his life, hanging with the wrong people with that weapon. Got that boy killed, okay? Hanging with the wrong people, where the parents at? Got that boy killed. So the question I asked the audience and the student, what part did, if the boy just walking down the street minding, been eating Skittles and drinking iced tea, it would be a different dynamic. But him and that 20-year-old was aiming at cars or aiming in the direction of cars, firing that weapon 8 times. And so they knew they had propensity to fire the weapon for a whole lot of nothing. A whole lot of nothing got that boy killed, Contreras. Okay? A whole lot of foolishness got that boy killed. And the question I ask anybody, what part did that boy play in? He's not entirely innocent, Contreras. So that's what I'm saying. And no, I do not justify the killing of the boy. My heart goes out to that boy. He ain't lived no life. But that 20-year-old, his ass ought to be doing some time. That family need to be what it was. Come on now. We need to take more control of our children now, Contreras. I knew what my 13-year-old was. I bet she wasn't in the street shaking up her hand. I bet she ain't got no babies. I can tell you that. So that's what I'm saying, Contreras. That's all I'm saying. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But, Contreras, if you have some further comments, we're listening. Otherwise, we're going to move right along to some much more important studies.
Yeah, man. You said a mouthful.
Okay. And I love the boy, Contreras. I love all young people. Gee, I love children. I love babies. I love young children. I love it. And my heart goes out to him. And my heart goes out to the parents. But we just can't just suspect the police to raise our children, Contreras. We got to take control as parents. And we got to take ownership. And not let Big Dad and Big Mama, because Big Dad and Big Mama going to either lock them up or they're going to kill them. So we got to take much more ownership and stop letting Big Dad and Big Mama kill them or lock them up. That's all that they're going to do for them. So keep your babies in the house. That's all I'm going to say. All right, fellow students, may the Most High bless us, because we need it. We definitely need it. And once we've done this study, and Contreras, we try to break this stuff down for y'all. But y'all got to apply this stuff. Just like we're talking about this little boy lost his life. Y'all got to apply this stuff. Y'all got to apply it in your lives, not only in your lives, in the lives of your families. Otherwise, you strengthen your responsibilities as parents, as husbands, as wives, as community. And you're expecting someone else to do it for you. But somebody else ain't going to do it for you. You got to do this stuff for yourself. We got to do this stuff for ourselves. We got to come together We got to go to Yah. We got to get some wisdom under, and we got to apply it. Otherwise, things like this, as far as this young boy is concerned, going to continue to happen. The onus and responsibility of the household lies on the father and the mother in the household. Not on Big Dad and Big Mama. Big Dad and Big Mama don't give a damn about you. They'll kill you and lock you up. So you need to stop playing about Yah and playing about business and get into business and be real about it. And I said this all the time before these studies. You got to get real about it. Oh, I love the Lord and they ain't doing nothing else. They ain't taking care of your wives, your husband, your children, or nothing. So we got to take these things seriously. I love the Lord, and that's it. Oh, wait, Contrail. I went into a tangent. I do apologize. But I just hate to see that young boy get shot down, slaughtered like that. He made... Samuel never saw King Saul again to the day of his death. But Samuel grieved, just like we're grieving for this boy, over King Saul, because Yah regretted that he made King Saul king over Israel.
You read that yesterday, bro.
Yeah, well, I know. Let me do this, Katri. I'm trying to keep a continuation. And Yah said to Samuel, how long will you grieve over Israel? Oh, excuse me. How long will you grieve over Saul, since I rejected him as king over Israel? Did I, Contrail? Hold on. Are you saying I read the whole chapter?
We in 17, bro.
Oh, okay. My thinker broke, man. I got off point. I do apologize. My thinker broke. Students, bear with me. This 13-year-old boy and his demise got discombobulated because I hate to see that. And please forgive me. Chapter 17. The Philistines assembled their forces for battle. They massed at Soko of Yehuda, a town or place in Yehuda, and encamped at Iphis Damim between Soko and Azekah. Hold on. Aviyah sent me a message. Aviyah, thank you. I appreciate you. A little bit too late. Katriel got me on point. Thank you very much. That was helpful, but Contrail already got me on point. May the Most High bless you. You're too much, too little, too late, but I'm very appreciative. And we're going on. Thank you very much, Abiyah. And King Saul and the men of Israel massed and encamped in the valley of Elah. They drew up a line of battle against the Philistines. King Saul and the men of Israel massed and encamped at the valley of Elah. They drew up their line of battle against the Philistines, with the Philistines stationed on one hill and Israel stationed on the opposite hill, the line of battle. The ravine was between them. That was the line between them, the ravine. A champion of the Philistine forces stepped forward. His name was Goliath of Gath. He was 6 cubits and a span high. Contreras said he was 8.5 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a breastplate of scale armor like a scale fish, but it was an armor. A bronze breastplate weighed 5,000 shekels. Man, that's a lot of shekels. That's a lot of weight. He had bronze graves on his leg, in the front of his legs, graves, and a bronze javelin slung from his shoulder. Man, that guy was, he was ready for war. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's bar. I looked at a weaver's bar. And I looked at the weaver's bar, and it had wrappings around it so you can get a grip on it. So he had wrappings around it so he can get a good grip on it. And the iron head on his spear weighed 600 shekels. Now, I looked at another Raphael giant. And his was 300 shekels, and that was 7.8 pounds. And this heel was 14, 15 point some odd pounds. 15 pounds. The head of his spear was 15 point some odd ounces pound. And the shield bearer marched in front of it. Man, 15 pounds. Just for the head of his, this guy was built. He was a big dude. He stopped and called out to the ranks of Israel and said to them, why should you come out to engage in battle? I am the Philistine champion, and you are King Saul's servants. Choose one of your men. Let him come down to me. If he bests me and comes back and kills me, we will become your slaves. But if I best him and kill him, it was all out. There wasn't no knock him out and whatnot. I got to kill him, or he got to kill me. You shall be our slaves and servants. And the Philistine ended. I hereby defy the ranks of Israel. Get me a man. Let's fight it out. He was sort of cursing Israel. Y'all ain't about nothing. When King Saul and all of Israel heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and terror-stricken. Oh, Lord. Man, did you see that guy? You see that head on that spear, 14 pounds? You see his shield? You see his scales on his armor? You see the degrees on his four leg? Oh, no, man, I can't even get close to that guy. They were sort of dismayed and terrified, as it said. Now, young Dawood was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Yehuda, whose name was Jesse, his father. He had eight sons. In the days of King Saul, the man was already old, advanced in years. The three oldest of Jesse had left and gone with King Saul to war. The names of these three sons who had gone to war was Eliab, the firstborn, the next Abinadab, and the third Shammah. And Dawood was the youngest. The three oldest had followed King Saul. They were incorporated into his army, fighting men. And Dawood would go back and forth from attending on Saul, King Saul, to shepherd his father's flock at Bethlehem. Young Dawood would go back for attending on King Saul and shepherd his, before this is happening, before him attending on King Saul. The Philistines stepped forward morning and evening and took his stand for 40 days. For 40 days, he made the challenge. Jesse said to his son, Dawood, I need to take some supplies. Take an ephah of parched corn, 10 loaves of bread for your brothers, and carry them quickly to your brothers in the war camp, in the camp. Take them 10 cheeses. Take these 10 cheeses to the captain of that 1,000. I want you to give me a report. Find out how your brothers are and bring some token from them. Bring me something from them. King Saul and the brothers and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah in the war at that time when Dawood approached the encampment against the Philistines. They were at their war stance. They weren't in the camp. Early next morning, Dawood left in charge of the flock. He took the provisions and set out as his father Jesse had instructed him. He reached the barricade, the encampment, as the army were going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. We had a war cry. I don't know what it was. Don't ask me. I wouldn't know. Israel and the Philistines drew up their battle lines opposite each other. I have my suspicion what that war cry was, but I can't say. Dawood left his baggage with the man in charge of the baggage, the encampment, and ran toward the battle line and went to greet his brothers. While he was talking to them, the champion, Goliath, the Philistine of God, stepped forward from the Philistine's rank and spoke the same words as before. And Dawood heard him. When the men of Israel saw the man, they fled in terror, oh Lord. And the men of Israel were saying among themselves, do you see that man coming out? Oh, no. He comes out to defy Israel, but you ain't going out to take up the chalice now, are you? The man who kills him will be rewarded by the king with great riches, but ain't nobody trying to stretch out. He will also give his daughter in marriage and grant exemptions, tax exemptions, to the father's house in Israel. David asked the men standing near him, what would be done for the man who kills that Philistine and removes the disgrace from Israel? He's disgracing Israel. Who is that uncircumcised Philistine that dares defy the ranks of the living Elohim? Well, young David, man, he wouldn't have none of that. The troops told him in the same words that would be done for the man who kills him. When Eliab, his older brother, heard him speaking, he knew his brother's voice. Heard him, that's Dawood. Eliab became angry with David and said, why did you come down here? And with whom did you leave those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your impotence and your impertinence. I know you, brother. And you came down to watch the fighting. But David replied, what have I done now? Y'all always picking on me. What I did now, it's just like we talked. Now, what I done did now, I was only asking, and he was a snappy young fellow now, wasn't he? I was only asking. He turned away from him towards someone else and turned his back on his brother. Yeah, I like that. When he kind of a little jazzy little fellow, he asked the same question. And the troops gave him the same answer. He wanted to be sure that he heard what he heard. And the things Dawood said were overheard and were reported. People overheard Dawood talking all snazzy, like he a bachelor. And so someone reported to King Saul, who had him brought over. Bring him over. Bring that young fellow over here. Dawood said to King Saul, let no man's courage fail him. I mean, if he's young, he can get over with him. I ain't got no problem with it. I mean, it don't seem like his courage had failed him. But your servant will go and fight that Philistine. Oh, hold on. Let's go back. King Saul, and Dawood said to King Saul, I mean, this boy, he got spitfire in him. Dawood says to King Saul, let no man's courage fail him. He ready to fight. Your servant will go and fight that Philistine. I ain't scared. But King Saul said to Dawood, you cannot fight that Philistine. You cannot go to that Philistine and fight him. You're only a boy. He's been a warrior. He's been trained as a warrior from his youth. Dawood, leading on Yah, ain't having none of that. He ain't scared. Dawood replies to King Dawood, your servant has been tending, and he gave justification. I'm ready. Your servant has been tending his father's sheep. And if a lion or a bear came and carried off an animal from the flock, I will go after it and fight it and rescue it from his mouth. I ain't scared. I'm ready. And if it attacked me, I would seize it by his beard and strike it down and get it. I ain't scared. I got Yah on my side. I ain't scared of nothing. Your servant, I have killed both lion and bear. I'm ready. And that uncircumcised Philistine shall end up like one of them. I ain't scared. For he has defiled the ranks of the living Elohim. He put his mouth on us. He bad mouthing us. I'm not going to have none of that. The Elohim. Dawood went on. Who saved me from lion and bear will also save me from that Philistine. He said, I'm trusting in Yah. Just like Yah saved me from that bear and that lion, he going to save me from that Philistine. I ain't scared. I'm ready. I ain't never been ready. More ready than what I am now. So King Saul ain't going to argue with him. He said, he didn't go. King Saul said to Dawood, may Yah be with you. King Saul clothed Dawood in his own garments, his own fighting garments. He placed a bronze helmet on his head and fastened a breastplate on his front. And Dawood girded his sword over his garment. Then he tried to walk, but he was a boy. But he was not used to it because he was not trained like that as a young warrior. And Dawood said to King Saul, I can't walk in these. I'm not used to them. I'm not raised up to be carrying all this weight around. So Dawood took them off. He took his stick, picked a few smooth stones from the wadi, put them in the pocket of his shepherd's bag, sling in his hand, and he went toward the Philistines. I ain't scared. Y'all with me. I ain't scared. The Philistine, meanwhile, was coming closer to Dawood. He was approaching Dawood too, preceded by his shear bearer. When the Philistine caught sight of Dawood, he scorned, for he is just a boy, ruddy and handsome though, but I'm going to still kill him. And the Philistine called out to Dawood, am I a dog that you come against me with sticks? You going to try to run me off like I'm a dog with some sticks? The Philistine cursed Dawood by his gods. And the Philistine said to Dawood, come here. I'll give your flesh to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the field. Dawood replied to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear. You got a sword, you got a spear, and you got a javelin. But I ain't scared. You know why? I come against you in the name of Yah, of hosts, the Elohim of the ranks of Israel, whom you have defied. You bad master. This very day, Yah will deliver you into my hands. I will kill you, cut off your head, and I will give the carcasses and the Philistine camp to the birds of the sky and the beasts of the earth. All the earth shall know that there is Yah in Israel. And this whole assembly shall know that Yah can give victory without a sword or a spear, for the battle is of Yah's. He will deliver you into my hand. I have great confidence in Yah. I'm not leaning to my own understanding. I don't need no extra. I don't need no machine gun. I don't need no bazooka. I don't need no tank. Only thing I need is Yah. So when the Philistine began to advance toward young Dawood, Dawood quickly did some moves on. You know, we good with moves. Young Dawood ran up to the battle line to face the Philistine. He ran up there. He read it. Dawood put his hand into the bag. He took out a stone and slung it. You know, you ever seen them ancients slinging? I mean, they be swinging that thing. That thing be going. It struck the Philistines in the forehead, dead in the forehead. The stone sunk into his forehead. He fell face down on the ground. He fell face down on the ground. Thus, Dawood bested the Philistine with a sling and a stone, a slingshot. He struck him down and killed him. Now, Dawood had left his sword and everything behind because he said, I can't walk in this. So the worst thing, to take a man on weaponry and kill him. And they're like, I didn't bring a gun to the fight, but you going to best me and then take my gun and kill me. That is the worst thing you can do to a warrior. So King Dawood bested the Philistine with sling and stone. He struck him down and killed him. Dawood had no sword, as I said. So Dawood ran up, and with it, he dispatched him with his own sword. He stood over the Philistine, grasped his sword, and put it up from his sheath, and with it dispatched him and cut off his head. when the Philistines saw their great warrior who had all his attributes of war. He had javelins, sword, shield. He had everything. I guess they were rather dumbstruck. The men of Israel, they ran. Would you too? I'd have ran from their young whippersnapper too. This man had the best of modern warfare. He was equipped for battle. But like Dawood said, Yah gives the battle to anybody. You don't need all that. I don't need all that. Y'all need to let this sink into your minds. But apparently some of you hadn't because of your lack of study. So he saw that warrior was dead. They ran. The men of Israel and Yehuda rolled up with a war cry. And I wonder what that war cry was. And they pursued the Philistines all the way to Gath and to the gate of Ephron. The Philistines fell mortally wounded along the road to Shaaraim, up to Gath Ephron. When the Israelites returned from chasing the Philistines and looted their camps on the way back, Dawood took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem and put his weapon in his own tent. Look here, that little young fella, he was something else. He took the man's head to Jerusalem and put his weapons in his own tent. I earned this. When King Saul saw Dawood coming out to assault the Philistine, he asked the army commander Abner, "Whose son is that boy, Abner?" And Abner replied, "By your life, Your Majesty, I don't know." Then find out whose son that young fella is, the king ordered. So when Dawood returned after killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him up to Saul with the head of the Philistine still in his hand. King Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, boy?" And Dawood answered, "The son of the servant of death of Bethlehemite." That boy was real bad. I like that fella. My kind of fella. No wonder y'all said he's a man after his own heart. He trusted in y'all. He depended in y'all. And he barred none. He feared none. It wasn't about might, what all you got, your javelin, you got your sword, you got your spear, you got your shield, you got your shield. I ain't got none of that. Only thing I got is y'all. Pull it on me. I ain't scared of you. See, if some of you ask for a thinker like King Dawood, you'd be in better shape because you would trust in y'all in all your ways. Otherwise, you find yourself in dire straits like we're finding ourselves in dire straits now. That being said, Cartrell, my dear brother and friend, what is your commentary?
King David was a mighty young man.
What
his experience.
What did he know? He's a fireball. That's what we call him.
So we think that being a shepherd is easy. But
no,
the fact that his life experience as a shepherd shows you that there was perils as far as being
right.
a shepherd is concerned.
Because
if we were shepherds today, right, we went out into the wilderness, we had sheep, and if a bear took one of your sheep, what would you do? Would you fight him like King David did? Maybe not.
Maybe
or what
not.
If a lion came up and snatched one of your sheep? Would you do what he did?
Maybe not.
But being young, he's like a teenager. They consider him a boy.
Right.
He was able to face both bears and lions. And he wasn't just lying to the king.
And what did he say, Katya? Yah gave him victory over that bear and lion.
That's the important part because he bore witness that the Most High was always with him anytime he was in danger from dangers that were greater than he could handle himself. So him knowing that vibration, anytime he got in trouble, the Most High would help him and show him the way out of it.
Right.
It made him holy, bold, and fearless
in anything
that he faced.
What did he do?
So his brothers tried to put him down and said, "Where's the sheep you're supposed to be watching?" Like trying to diminish his status as a young man that want to fight.
Right.
But actually, it was his attribute because not only did he leave somebody in charge of his sheep? He was an excellent shepherd because, as he explained to the king, he fended off lions and bears. So he had no fear. And he said, just like these lions and bears try to take my sheep, I'm going to take this man down.
Right.
Because he got a big mouth.
Well, Kadria, go back to the move he did on his older brother. Go back to that move he did on his older brother. Why what you mess with me for now? What I did now? And then turn his back on his brother, Kadria, and talk to somebody like his brother. What are you doing? I ain't even know what you talking about. Okay?
So David wasn't there on his own accord. His father sent him to bring refreshment to his older brothers.
Right.
And to bring something to the captain. So David didn't go there on his own accord. But in his brother's mind, he doesn't know his little brother, David, right? He don't really know.
No, not really.
That's why King David turned his back on him. Because, you know, ain't no time for me to get in a beef with you now, big brother. You know, we got a mission here. You got this big man cursing the nation, and you got the men in fear, and he's cursing our God, and nobody's standing for.
And ain't nobody doing nothing about it? And then
I got my dad.
Right. And Contrail, here's what people fail in that whole course of conversation, what you're talking about, here's what people fail to realize what you just said. King Dawood not only had Yah's, he wasn't king yet. Young Dawood not only had Yah upon him, but he had his daddy's authority, and his brother was under his daddy's authority. So he said, not only do I have Yah authority, I got my daddy's authority. So I don't want to hear nothing you saying, big bro, okay? I don't want to hear none of that right now. I'm on a mission, okay?
So although he's not king in the eyes of the nation, he's king in the eyes of the Most High. He's still king in the eyes of the Most High. He already been anointed. So
that's
in all
said, I like what you just said. I like what you just said. I like it.
Sure. It's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a king in waiting, which is why the Most High is moving him in a way that he's moving him, not just, you know, in his environment, but in his spirit. He's connected totally with the Most High, and he's allowing the Most High to guide him in everything that he does. And everything that he does is successful because he allows the Most High to guide him. So he's not afraid of this giant, nor anything that stands before him, because he knows that the Most High is his God. And he got it at a young age. You got people that's way older than him, and even a king. King should have his spirit to lead the nation, that fearless spirit, because he knows that Yah fights our battles for the nation of Israel for us. And it ain't by might, it ain't by strength. And King David proved it to everybody. You don't need no shield. You don't need no helmet. You don't need no armor bearer. All I got is a stick and some rocks and a sling, and I'm going to beat you. I'm going to cut your head off, and I'm going to feed you to the birds of the air. And, you know, people talk, but he backed up his talk with action, didn't he?
He certainly did.
Yeah.
He most certainly did.
A lot of people out there talking, they talk a good game, but when it comes to action part, you should be looking for them like you was looking for King Saul when they were trying to find him to, you know, make him king.
Exactly. He was humble to Yah, but he wasn't shy. He spoke his mind. He spoke his mind.
And you see his big brother had to back off.
He ain't said no more. He shut his big brother up. He shut him up.
Not only did he set him up, he shocked him. Imagine your little baby brother going out and killing a man that you're afraid of and all your partners and peers are afraid of, and your little baby brother goes out and does the job.
And you know what they said, man, that's your brother? That little teenager, your brother? Man, your brother bad, man.
And King David couldn't have been lying about the bears and the lion because his brother was right there. So, you know, King Saul, yo, that's your brother? Did he really kill bears and lion? Yes, Your Majesty. He did bring home some heads of bears and some heads of lions. You thought the boy was crazy.
Yeah, mama got a bear skin rug. Daddy got a lion skin. He rests his feet on it. He that nice. No, that little boy, that my brother. He know I'm big bro. He gonna give me my respect to big bro. But that little boy ain't nothing. He just imperfect. He just that's him. That's his baby bro. That's what he do.
And you see, Eliab didn't put his hands on it either, because David probably would have knocked him down and knocked him out.
He the little boy, the little teenager is not scared.
Oh, no.
He ain't scared.
Big brother, little brother, king, yeah. Giant, it don't matter.
Put your hand on me. I'm here because Yah is upon me and daddy didn't sit me. That's how I don't need to hear that conversation from you right now, bro. I'm on a mission. I'm focused right now. All this arguing with you, I am not going to argue with you, okay? What I did in that? I'm not going to be arguing with you now.
So, y'all too.
Yo.
This is why the police fear our young brothers today, and they mm-hmm. shoot unarmed young black men. Well, you know, not just young black men, but our brothers in general.
Exactly.
Because these young brothers don't have that kind of fear that older people right. got. They don't have that kind of fear. Young teenagers are fearless.
Well, Katria, what
I remember being a teenager, and we didn't fear nobody.
Well, what did you say, Katria? Young Soup, you get out of that car. That woman shot you first. Well, look at Katria. I'm saying, it's funny, though, Katria. You're right, bro. I've been stopped by Mississippi police, and they had like I'd be to rob the bank. It'd be a traffic ticket. They'd be had their hands on their gun. I just pray to y'all. So you be with me, y'all.
The police in our neighborhood, they didn't get out mm-hmm. their cars without their hands on their gun.
That's what I'm saying. A traffic ticket, Katria. Come on, man.
Yeah.
When I was much younger than I am now, I was hell on wheels. And at that point in time, they had a right to put their hands on their guns. I was hell on wheels. And they still respond to me. I guess when they run your tags, Katria, they know what you used to be. And so by them running
from
my tags, yeah, they run the tag. They say, this guy used to be a bad guy, man. You better be ready for him. But now I'm an elder. I don't get out like that. You know, I ain't looking for no trouble. I just want to go home. You know, I don't want no trouble. I just want to make it home.
So they're making George Floyd look like a thug, a drug addict.
Right.
A bad guy. How many people in Hollywood do more drugs than...
Come on, man. Come on, Katria. You know the scope.
How many people that got millions of dollars do more cocaine and crack than...
Come on, Katria. You know the scope. I mean, Matt Gaetz, whatever that boy named from Florida, he have Candyland parties. You think he the guy in the Django from Candyland. He have Candyland sex parties with all kind of dope. They ain't pulling no guns on him now, is it?
And don't talk about, you know, the amount of drugs that they sell on Wall Street. They
exactly.
got like document Drugs Incorporated. If you watch those documentaries on Investigation Discovery, they show
right.
people, you know, drug dealers selling high-end cocaine and heroin and OxyContin and Percocet, and they do it up.
Yeah, they said
don't
in
talk
half
about
dollar.
Vegas either. Huh?
Katria, they said in half dollar dope. Okay.
Yeah. But you're gonna make George Floyd look like, you know,
he's a serial killer.
Or we the only people, you know, in the world that do drugs. Y'all
exactly.
flooded our neighborhoods with drugs, and
come on,
the fact that y'all prescribe Percocet and OxyContin to people for their pain, and you know it's addictive, then that doctor should be liable.
Well, Katja, I'm gonna say this: when we were in slavery, Jim Crowism, and additional Jim Crowism 1, 2, and 3 in Steele County, we didn't have access to pharmaceuticals and whatnot. They the one had access to pharmaceuticals and whatnot, and it flooded those things in our community. So I always make this analogy. You can talk about Frankenstein, but you fail and neglect to talk about Dr. and Mrs. Frankenstein. Who made the monster? Dr. and Mrs. Frankenstein. So don't be talking about the Poe monster. The Poe monster was made by, but he didn't want to be made like that. But you made that monster like that. Now y'all want to burn him and everything. Won't you burn Dr. Miss Frankenstein? Don't be trying to just burn the mustard that they have to create in our communities, worldwide, universally speaking. Deal with Dr. Miss Frankenstein, universal white race supremacy. That's what you need to be burning down instead of that poor mustard they made. Okay? That's all I'm going to say about that, Katria.
Well, they going to war with the monster they made, the war on drugs.
Exactly.
But we don't make the guns, the Smith & Wessons and the 9mm, nor do we make the ammunition. So how are guns so prevalent in our neighborhood. Not only do you pour drugs into our neighborhood, but you pour guns as well. And then you want to play cops and robbers with us and throw us in jail and make that a highly profitable institution, the criminal justice system, whereas you don't stop, you know. We talk about war on the cartels, but they only began to go to war on the cartels when it affected their communities.
Right.
And then on epidemic proportion. Oh, now we got to stop it for real. No,
exactly.
You should have stopped it before you try to put it on us.
Exactly. Well, country.
You read what you sow, don't you? You fall into your own traps. So now America is addicted to these oxycondons. It ain't just George Floyd. They got a pandemic, epidemic of people who are addicted to these opioids.
Exactly.
We're talking about people in the suburbs and in high-end people who are addicted.
Exactly.
But it's so unfortunate.
Well, it is, Contra.
Yeah, we caught that.
Okay. Well, Contra, if you're done with your commentaries, I certainly am, and we'll move right into the next chapter.
Okay. Keep it moving.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. All right, fellow students. Chapter 18. Continuing on. When Dawood finished speaking with King Saul, Jonathan's soul became bound with the soul of Dawood. He had a kinship with him. This is what we call kinship, friendship, kinship. Jonathan apparently was around, witnessing everything that went down. Jonathan loved Dawood as himself. Jonathan
and
loved
America.
Yeah, and vice
Jonathan
versa.
Jonathan was renowned too for going to war with the Philistines with his armor bearer.
Exactly. King Saul took him into his service like he had taken his brother into his military service that day and would not let him return to his father's house that very day. Jonathan.
So Yam Su.
Mm-hmm.
In the last chapter, it said he was going back and forth to serve Saul. And he was, because anytime Saul got that disquieted spirit, he would call King David to play the harp for him, calm him down. And after he was calmed down, they would send him home to go back to watch his father's sheep. So he had two jobs, watch his father's sheep and take care of the king when it ended, ever the king got into one of those fits of madness.
Okay. All right. So Jonathan and Dawood, King Saul's son Jonathan, made a pact because Jonathan loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the cloak and tunic he was wearing and gave it to Dawood. With it, together with his sword, bow and arrow, and belt, Dawood went out with the troops. He was successful in every mission on which King Saul sent him, because Yah is with him. Yah put him in command of all the soldiers. This pleased all the troops. They liked it. And Saul's couriers as well, they liked it, because this man, every fight he get into, he win. When the troops came home, and Dawood returned from killing the Philistine, the women of the town of Israel came out singing and dancing. You know, we like to sing and dance. There we go. To greet King Saul with trembles, shouting, and sistrums. The women sang as they danced, and they chanted, King Saul has slain his thousand. Dawood. His 10,000.
He would have got you.
You know, I had it like that in this country.
King Saul would have got you, man. He heard you singing that song.
Somebody out there like
singing that song? Me 1,000? David 10,000? Sue singing that? Bring him here.
King Saul has slain his 1,000. His 10,000. I got a little something going on, Katrin. King Saul was much distressed and greatly vexed about the matter. He didn't like that.
So wait a minute. Because you know how we do music, right?
Right.
You hear that beat, you start dancing, you start moving.
Right.
And you know, King Saul probably was in the groove, dancing, moving.
Yeah.
He wasn't listening to the lyrics.
Boy,
and then he caught
the
lyrics.
God, we like a beat. But they ate. We like a beat. You just shake your head. Then it went to King Saul.
His kids a thousand. He just shaking it in. Dawoo. His kids is 10,000. Oh, Lord. What is they saying? Oh, yeah, that would upset your country. It has certainly upset the king. King Saul was distressed and greatly vexed about the matter. For he said to Dawood, they have given you 10,000, and to me, they have given 1,000. All that he lacks is the kingship. They give him 10,000, gave me 1,000. All they lack is giving him the kingship. That's next. From that day on, King Saul felt a jealous eye. He put the evil eye on Dawood. From that day on.
So the next day. What was the prize that the person that killed the Goliath was supposed to get?
He's supposed to get his father exempted from taxes, his sorority house, and his daughter's hand in marriage.
And what else?
I forgot what else. What else, Katria?
Riches.
In that case, Cartrell, you remember that movie Forrest Gump? You remember when he went up to the president and they told Forrest Gump, they said I was going to get $1 million, but I never did see that money. It's called $1 million wound, but I never did see that money. In the case, King Dawood, Dawood said it's that. He never did see that money, okay? And he and as further along in the story, we're going to see, but I don't even know if he exempt the house of Jesse from taxes. And certainly we will find out further in our studies how he come about the hand of marriage with Michal, King Saul's youngest daughter, Michal.
He was supposed to get this prize right off the top.
That's what I'm saying. He didn't have to do no extra. But we will see. King Saul is not turning to be a man of his word. Okay? And we always say, keep your word. The next day, an evil spirit of Yah sent his evil spirit, gripped King Saul. And he began to rave in the house, going, stop cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Stop raving mad. While David was playing the lyre, as he did daily, King Saul had a spear in his hand. This little sap sucker. And King Saul threw the spear, thinking to pin David to the wall.
But that Dawood, music wasn't working that day.
No, it wasn't. He wasn't feeling it. But King Dawood eluded him twice. He threw at him twice. King Saul was afraid of Dawood, for the Elohim was with him. See, y'all ain't got to worry about nothing. See, y'all got the game twisted. They got to worry about something. You know what? If Yah is with you, you ain't got to get you no AK-47. You ain't got to get you no grenade, bazooka. If Yah is with you, folk gonna be terrified of you anyway. You got the game twisted.
And you ain't got to tell everybody that God is with me, that I did this with God and God came to me. No, it's self-evident.
You ain't got to sit on the street corner and tell them they're contrary. You ain't got to run in your house and, Yah is with me. You ain't got to say, Yah is with me. They already know Yah is with you.
Self-evident, okay? As it was with King David. Exactly. Why is King Saul afraid of him? Because he knows that the Most High is with him. How does he know the Most High is with him? David didn't tell him that the Most High is with me. He could see it.
Right.
Just like his enemies, anybody that he faced.
Right.
He could see, something's with this man. I can't explain it, but there's something about this man.
Something about this man. He
ain't
running
around. Something about that woman.
Something about that woman. That Yah is with her. Yah is with him.
Yes.
And so they ain't got to run around being braggadocious, running their mouths off.
Deborah didn't do it, did she? They knew that the Most High was with Deborah. And they wouldn't go to battle without her, did they?
Exactly. She didn't.
And she said, if I go, the woman's going to get the victory.
Yah is with me. She didn't have to do none of that. They knew it. And if Yah is with you, you ain't got to do none of that. They know it. Just make sure your eyes with you. Don't be positive, though.
Here we go.
Okay.
You can't play games with Yah. You can play games with man. But if you want to be with Yah and you want Yah to be with you, you got to follow his rules, not your own rules.
Exactly. So King Saul was afraid of Dawood, for Yah was with him. And he turned away, and he turned away from King Saul, and had turned away, excuse me, had turned away from King Saul. So
Yamsu, Yamsu.
Mm-hmm.
This is King David's first opportunity to kill King Saul. Rather than kill him, because he could have with the two javelins he missed, he could have took the two javelins and threw him back.
Right. But he didn't do that. He wasn't that kind of man.
No.
So Saul removed him from his presence. So Saul had had him removed from his presence and appointed him chief of 1,000. I don't even want him around me. To march at the head of the troops. He wanted him to get killed, truth be told. But nevertheless, Yah being with him, Dawood was successful in all his undertaking. For Yah was with him. And when King Saul saw that he was successful, he dreaded it. Man, I'm scared of that though. All Israel and Yehuda loved Dawood. For he marched at their head. He's their commander. King Saul said to Dawood, "Here's my older daughter, Meribah. I will give her to you in marriage. In return, you be a warrior and fight the battles of Yah." Saul thought, "Let not my hand strike it. Let the hand of the Philistine, let me put him in the midst of the fight. He gets struck down and I'm good." Dawood replied to King Saul, "Who am I? What is my, I'm humble. My father's family in Israel, that I should become your majesty's son-in-law. I ain't nothing." But at that time.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to be his majesty's son-in-law by now, because that was the prize for killing the giant, right?
But Saul went back on his word, unfortunately, Israel.
Yeah.
He wasn't a man of his word.
Unfortunately.
And that's not a good thing for nobody.
Especially not a king.
Right. But at the time, Meribah, the daughter of King Saul, should have been given to Dawood. But she was given in marriage to Adriel, the Meholathite. Now, Michael, daughter of King Saul, had fallen in love with Dawood. She loved him. And when this was reported to King Saul, he was like, I'm going to make some moves. King Saul thought, "I will give her to him. And she can serve as a snapper. She can trap him. She can run game so that the Philistine may kill him." So King Saul said to Dawood, "You can become my son-in-law even now through the second one." And King Saul instructed his courtiers, said to Dawood proudly, "The king is fond of you and all his courage is like you. So why not become the king's son-in-law?" Running game. When the king's courtiers repeated, setting him up. When the king's courtiers repeated these words to Dawood, Dawood replied, "Do you think that becoming the son-in-law of a king is a small matter? Do you think that's a small matter? When I'm but a poor man of no consequence, that's not a small matter." Saul's courage reported to him. This is what Dawood said in response to what we told him. And the king said, setting him up, because I'm going to get him killed right now, said to Dawood, "The king desires no bride price. You ain't got to give me nothing for it," but he had already paid the bride price. "Then the foreskin of 100 Philistines. Just bring the foreskins of 100 Philistines as vengeance on the king's enemy." He thought he was going to get him killed. King Saul intended to bring about Dawood's death at the hand of the Philistine. When his couriers told this to Dawood, Dawood was pleased with the idea of becoming the king. So, I think that'll work for me then. All right. I put in a little work. I become his son-in-law. All right. I don't want something for nothing, but I already got him. But now he didn't go with bad words. But that's all right. I can do that. Before the time had expired, Dawood went out with his men and killed 200 Philistines. Daru brought their foreskins, and they were counted out for the king that he might become the king's son-in-law. King Saul gave his daughter Michal in marriage. When King Saul realized that Yah was with Daru and that Michal, daughter of Saul, King Saul, loved him, he said, man, I can't win for losing. I can't win. Yah is with him. My daughter loves him. I can't win for losing. Then King Saul grew more afraid of Dawood. King Saul was Dawood's enemy ever after. He never changed his mindset on Dawood for nothing. The Philistine chief marched out to battle. Every time they marched out, Dawood was more successful than all the other officers of King Saul. His reputation preceded itself. His sword. Everybody knew about him. Even his enemies knew about King Dawood. He wasn't king then, young Dawood, the commander. All right, Katria, what say you, my brother and friend?
So we can see that King Saul was a lame duck king, and the real king of Israel was really protecting the nation, like he was a shepherd when he was a little boy. So we think King Saul, you know, he's the first king, but the second king was right there with him. And he was really the leader of the nation by proxy. King Saul was trying to kill him by putting him in front of the worst of his enemies. And all the Most High was doing was giving him victory over the worst of our enemies. So his reputation and his fame was growing more and more. The more King Saul tried to get him killed, the more famous he became. And you could see that King Saul was, you know, like a very crafty dude. You promise to give the person that killed a giant, your daughter, riches and no taxes on that family, but you didn't come through with that.
No.
Now, you put in a barrier in front of King David specifically to try to get him killed. And I'm sure King David wasn't no fool, and he seen the handwriting on the wall and knew what was going on, but he knew that the Most High would protect him against anything, no matter what the king was trying to do.
Exactly.
So he couldn't really be enemy back to the king. He, like, two wrongs don't make a right, because King David could have turned on him and had the people, like, just overthrow him, right, for what he was trying to do. But he didn't do that because he knew better, which made him a righteous man. You know, my brother's trying to kill me, but he's still my brother. I still love him. I love his son. Even though he tried to kill me, I'm not going to try to kill him back. How many of us could do that? That's the side of a real mighty man. When somebody trying to kill you and you don't have the same animosity towards them, you're not trying to kill them. They're trying to kill you. But I know better than to try to kill my brother. He doesn't know better than to try to kill me, but I know better than to try to kill him. But if it comes, push come to shove, I'm going to defend myself.
Right.
Push come to shove, I have to defend myself. And that's what King David did. He just defended himself. He didn't take it extra where I had the opportunity to take your head like I took Goliath. But I'm not going to let you kill me.
Right.
So you enemy to the king in your own land, that's crazy. And all these victories you've been getting for the people love you, you're celebrating. And people, you know, are not vexed by the Philistines anymore. But you got an enemy within. And he's the biggest enemy that you could have because he's the king. That's so crazy.
It's crazy.
Can you imagine his life? That's why he wrote so many songs, because he had much trouble. As much as Yah was with him, when you walk that righteous path, you're going to have people trying to take you down.
Just the way it is, Cartier. Just the way it is. Don't take it personally.
Just get to know Yah better and let him be your shield and your buckler and your first line of defense.
Nah, that's your best.
Run to him when you have troubles. That's what we learned from King David. King David didn't run to his counselors. He didn't run to his advisors. He didn't run to the elders. Anytime he had a problem, he went straight to Yah. Every time. And then he got counsel where he needed to get counsel.
That's your best.
That's a pattern we should all have. Don't take your problems to man. Take them to Yah. Man can't solve your problems. Yah sees the higher picture, the bigger picture. And he has more tools to help you with your problem than man does. So.
Exactly.
I mean, we've never learned this, and it's hard to turn to this because of what we learned. Teach a child in a way that it should go, and when he's old, he shall not depart from it. What we've learned when we're young, it's hard to depart from the ways that we've learned. To learn how to lean on Yah, they call it a leap of faith. But you got to take that leap of faith and trust in Yah. With all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And watch his wonders, watch his might, watch his miracles.
Exactly.
Because that's what King David did, because he's facing a miraculous situation. I mean, you can't even imagine that scenario. Him facing that giant. Two armies facing off for 40 days. Nobody ready to jump to challenge the giant. And here comes this young shepherd boy. Goliath had to laugh like, come on now. Y'all can't be serious. You came out here with a stick to fight me?
You like I'm a dog? You gonna beat like me with a stick?
You gonna chase me with that little stick you got?
Like I'm a dog?
He said, no, I'm gonna take your head and feed it to the dogs. Your man was bold to be talking. That's like Muhammad Ali. You're like, this dude, yo, he's throwing verbal fire. Because really, it's psychological warfare, right?
Exactly.
And I'm sure it threw Goliath off his game to see this young boy talking his trash. He's like all furious. Now he's off his game. Because it's an insult to him. Insult. Mm-hmm. He's sending this little kid, he ain't got no experience, and he going to fight me?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not by your might, not by your strength, but by the power of Yah. Let Yah give you the victory. It's his victory, not your victory. And this story of King David and Goliath is a very famous story. It's always a reference. Got the Davids facing the Goliaths. You know, they use that metaphor, right? But it's really Yah that gave King David the victory. So King David knew it, and we should know it. Yah beat Goliath, not King David necessarily, because that's such a weak strategy. You're going out with a stick and a sling to beat a giant who got mail, armor, a javelin that's big as a weaver's bar or beam that weighs 15 pounds at the tip of it and a sword. Yeah. So, I don't know. The Philistines were some bad people. And this dude, like you said, he was a big dude. And you know his armament was, it probably slowed him down, which gave King David a better opportunity to strike where he struck. But anyway, I'm just dwelling on what we just read, because it's our history, the history of our kings, first and the second one.
Exactly.
Simultaneously living at the same time.
Mm-hmm. All right, Cartrell. If we're done with your commentary, and I certainly am. I think you got one more chapter in the book of Proverbs, and I think you're moving on to Ecclesiastes tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, we are all ears, my brother.
Wait for my computer to boot up.
Okay.
Let's see if we gotta move. Well, here we go.
Okay.
So we have Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, the last proverb. Giving thanks and praise to the Holy One of Israel for even our King, King Solomon, considered the wisest man that ever lived. His last proverb, Proverb 31, his nickname, and he had a few of them, Koheleth, and we see another one, Lemuel. King Lemuel, that's another name for King Solomon. It says the words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. What, my son? So this prophecy, this wisdom is coming from King Solomon's mother, who shows you that even for a king, their mothers are important, right?
Exactly. Should be.
And you see this king remembered the mother, the words that his mother taught him. And she probably reiterated over and over again. What, my son, and what? The son of my womb, and what? The son of my vows. Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy waves to that which destroy king. It is not for kings, O Lemuel, it's not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink. Why would she say that? She's trying to give him warning that he didn't really heed, because he gave his strength to women, didn't he? 700 wives and 300 concubines. He didn't follow his mother's counsel, at least not, you know, later on in his life. And for kings to drink wine, because it impairs your thinking. If you drink too much and you imbibe too much, you lose your self-control. The spirits take over, especially with strong drink. Wine is bad enough, but strong drink is even worse. Lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. So as a leader, you cannot, you have to be sober, especially because you're ministering to the people of the nation. It says, let him drink and forget his poverty. Strong drink to him that is ready to perish, and wine unto those that be of heavy hearts. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. So we see a purpose for drinking. People that are prepared to die, you know, their last moments, let them enjoy, you know, a little intoxication.
Right.
Or those that be of heavy hearts, you know. Sometimes a little drink will lift your spirits up and take your mind off your problems. It says, open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. So I know you'd be posting on Fool's Book.
Right.
Because if you don't, they will accelerate to the appointed time of destruction.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to give fools counsel. You try to give all people counsel. And
right.
You hope that Yah opens their eyes and their heart to follow the path of wisdom.
Exactly.
Otherwise, they're on the path of destruction.
Exactly.
Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and the needy. These are the things that we need to be talking about, not trying to tear each other down or put each other on blast or argue, fuss, and fight and contend who's the wisest, who's the prophet, who's this and who's that. We need to be looking for judgment, righteous judgment. We need to be helping the poor and the needy. These are the causes that we should be fighting for. Who could find a virtuous woman? For her place is far above rubies. Like a virtuous man or a virtuous king or a virtuous servant. Virtuosity is what we all need to achieve, but especially our women, because we see that King Solomon got the virtues of his wisdom from his mother. It says, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her so that she shall have no need for spoil. So she's not looking to get everything and buy everything and go shopping everywhere. She don't need the materialistic things.
Mm-mm.
It says, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so she will have no need for spoil, because he's taking care of all her needs. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. Yeah, she won't go running around with everybody in the hood, every John, every brother that's hitting on her, because there will be brothers that's hitting on brothers' wives.
It's just the way it is.
Huh? It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But her integrity, you know, makes her strong. She seeketh wool and flax and worketh willingly with her hands. You know, women are very crafty with knitting and weaver's beams. The weaver's beams was used to make clothes and blankets and all kinds of things. And our women were very skillful with their hands and still are. She is like the merchant ship. She bringeth her food from afar. She rises also while it is yet night and giveth meat to her household and a portion to her maidens. So she's like a lioness. She goes out and she's like a merchant. She's not afraid to go out at night because she's living in her own country amongst her own people. And she knows that she's protected.
Right.
And she considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand, she planted the vineyard. So she had rights. She had freedom. She had the ability to do these things. She girds her loins with strength and strengthens her arms. She perceives that her merchandise is good. Her candle goeth not out by night. So, yes, business-minded. We have a lot of business-minded sisters amongst us, especially in capitalist America. And that's one of their strengths, that they are merchants and traders. And our people were merchants and traders. And we see that our women were excellent merchants and traders when they had great virtue. She layeth her hand to the spindle, and her hands hold the staff. That's that weaver's beam. She stretches out her hand to the poor. Yea, she stretches forth her hands to the needy. Look, she's right in line and in tune with the Most High Yah, because that's what we all supposed to be doing. That should be our cause. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry. Her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders in the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girdles unto the merchants. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. That's the future world when the wicked is destroyed. She opens her mouth with wisdom, not contention, not debate, not argument. Women are supposed to speak wisdom to their people, to their children. And in her tongue is the law of kindness. And you're not supposed to be obstinate or bodacious, and you're supposed to be kind. Kind and speaking with wisdom. She looketh well to the ways of her household. She ain't worried about nobody else's house but her house. And eateth not the bread of idleness. Because when you idle, you're talking about everybody else and anybody else's house. Her children arise up and call her blessed. So her children love her because she puts wisdom and kindness into them, and she instructs them. Her husband also, and he praises her. That's the kind of woman and wife that a man wants, a woman who has that type of virtue. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth Yah, she shall be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates, because you reap what you sow. And if our women are on this path, they will be blessed, they will be praised, they will find husband, they will have children, they will be merchants, because you could do it all. See, we didn't restrict you to just being a mother to raise our children in the kitchen, to clean the house. No, we restrict our women. She's out in the streets selling merchandise. Exactly. She's making things.
Making
so
things happen.
Huh?
She's making things happen.
She's buying fields and growing stuff and making stuff, and she's taking care of the poor and the needy. These are the type of women that we need in our nation. And they've diminished our women's role, and we've diminished our women's role. And our women's role is spelled out. The virtue of our women is in this book right here. We respected our wives. We respected our mothers, because this is the king's mother who's giving all the nation of Israel this wisdom. So give thanks and praise to King Solomon's mother, and we know who she was, right? This is Bathsheba. This is the words of Queen Bathsheba.
Okay. Well, thank you, Cottrell. Do you have any closing remarks and before we get out of here, Cottrell?
I always love my mama. She's my favorite girl. You only get one.
Yeah.
So, give a lot of praise to my mother, who put wisdom, knowledge, kindness into my heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm blessed to have the mother that the Most High blessed me with. And I pray the Most High blesses her soul, and even my father as well, because she imparted many things in me as well. And I pray that Yah hears the cry of our family that are in distress. We in a time of trouble for Jacob like there's never been. But we know that when we trust in Yah, out of it, we will be saved. So make Yah your salvation, your shield, your refuge, your high tower, the first one you call when you're in trouble, and let him answer your prayers. Let go and let Yah. All praise and only one of Israel. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Well, I'm glad, fellow students, if you enjoyed this study session, you've gotten a lot of it, a lot out of it, and that now it's time to put in some work. Start applying what you've learned, because that's the only way it's going to work for you. Study is good, but application is far better. Cottrell and I, we don't know where you're going. But we do know this for a fact. You get ready to get out of here. You've been listening to the Real Talk for Real People show. May the Most High direct you. Order your steps. May you seek him in all your endeavors. And may, and most importantly, get you a new thinker. Get you a thinker like King Darwin. That one will work for you. The one you got right now is working on you. And that thinker that King Dawood had, King Dawood, the Most High Yah said about that thinker that King Dawood had, he's a man after my own heart, after my own way of thinking. That's the kind of thinking you want. We love you. May the Most High bless you. Shalom and good night. Thank you, Cartrell.
Thank you, Brother Yasu.
Thank you, Brother. Shalom.
Shalom.
So nice.